Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love. Hi, Burl.
Hi, Sherry. How are you?
It's good to see you today. Some days we see each other like the whole day, like beforehand, before podcasting, but not today.
Not today. Right before we walked into the studio, I told Sherry that nobody told me there'd be days like these.
And I said, that's not true.
That's true. So they warned me. Yeah. I actually sang it, but we're not going to sing right now. We save that for the end.
Okay, that's true. All right, we'll sing at the end.
That's a John Lennon song. Did you know that?
I did, actually.
Okay, all right.
Today's special guest, it's almost red season. Yay, That's So Cincinnati. See what I did there?
I did.
Today's special guest is Dimitri Young. He's one of two grand marshals for the opening day parade, which TikTok, we're in the countdown to. Pokey Reese is the other former red that will be like the grand marshals of the parade. And our parade is amazing. Made better this year. Why, Burl?
Because the Enquirer is going to be in the parade.
We have amazing grand marshals. We're going to talk to Dimitri today. But yes, the Enquirer will be in the parade. It's been a minute since we've done it, and it's always such a fun thing to do.
Right. I think, he'll be a fun guest because, you know, we're all about ramping up for the beginning of baseball season. So what better way than to talk to Dimitri Young? Like you said, he's going to be the one of two grand marshals, and he had a fun player when he was with the Reds. So I can't wait to see what he's up to.
The most of the baseball talk is going to come from Burl, I have something very special to talk to Dimitri about.
Okay.
Something that I suspect that a lot of people don't talk to him about.
Okay. Well, that'll be fun. But before we talk to Dimitri Young, we got a little bit of news to talk about. You and Scott Wortman had a fairly significant story published last week that we didn't have time to talk about, and that is your investigation into whether or not Hamilton County Commissioner Elisa Reese should have disclosed before voting on the convention center a family connection to a contractor of the convention center. So fill us in.
So, Elisa Reese is the president of the Board of Commissioners, the Hamilton County, and they're in the middle of this huge project that we just really have been covering for several years, which is, along with the city, building a convention center district, a much-needed one. The details can be disputed many different ways of what this all should look like, a hotel, what the convention center should look like. It involves green space, a parking garage. But our story was not about the project itself. Our story was about the idea that President Reese was making votes on the project, spending money, doing things that would, taking votes that would either keep it open or shut it down, depending on which way the votes went. And it turns out her father, Steve Reese Sr., was a contractor there to book events there. And we just really did a deep dive into what those votes looked like and the contract that her father had and what kind of work he was doing for the convention center. And it was a deep dive. And you guys, it took, I would say, a year. This is the kind of story that I worked on for a year. I had heard some things. When you make public records requests, you never really know what you're going to find. You never know when you're going to get them back. City.
Right. You never know when we have to sue to get the public records, which we do.
We will give a shout out to Jack Greiner because honestly, the original records that kind of pointed me in the direction of everything, the city did say they did not exist. And it really took Jack Greiner getting involved. And it turns out the records did exist. It's one of the reasons why I love covering City Hall. We're dealing with all of the taxpayer money, but there's just all documents and public records. And this story was a story where the documents told the tale. And I really encourage you. So many of you read it. Thank you very much. And it's just kind of the behind the scenes. We've written so much about this project, but this is really what goes into it, the votes, the money. And so.
Right. And what we learned, in a nutshell, is that There were times when Commissioner Reese was voting on the convention center project, knowing that depending on how the project moved forward, that the convention center would be shut down during renovations, directly affecting the financial opportunities her father had as a contractor.
Now, of course, she said she didn't know anything about her father's business.
Correct.
The one small thing she did say in the story. You know, both her and her father did not want to sit down for extensive interviews with some very specific questions, which I was disappointed in. They said a little bit in some beginning phone calls,
right,
but we never really had the chance to discuss the nuances of the story with either one of them.
Right. But what you know from the records and knowing, you know, that Alicia has at times worked for her father. It was not a big secret that Steve Reese was under contract with not the county per se, but the company that the city hired. This is where it gets so confusing.
There's a whole box of Q&A about how the convention center runs.
The city has hired a company to operate and manage the convention center, and they have a contract with Alicia's father, who's, you know, his company does a lot of things, but one of the things that he does that's pertinent to this story is look for events and groups to bring in for the convention center. So, you know, the question here is really one of disclosure. Should she have disclosed it or gotten a legal opinion from the county law director about whether or not she should disclose it or whether or not she should abstain from the vote regarding the convention center? So that's really what this story is about. You know, transparency, ethics when it comes to disclosing relationships. You know, I, as a director in the Gannett Company, every year have to disclose any relationships I might have with people that do business with Gannett because I make decisions on editorial coverage. And, you know, fortunately, I'm not a player like that. I don't have, you know, I don't sit on the board of Procter & Gamble. I don't have those types of things to disclose. So my disclosure is just pretty much like, you know, NA, not applicable. So this is very standard in terms of whether it's government ethics or corporate ethics, you know, the notion of disclosing family relationships that might, you know, that would, you know, could be perceived as something that might influence your vote. So those are important stories to do. And I don't want to tie this directly to, you know, what happened with the corruption charges on Cincinnati City Council, but I think they're all related, that ethics
just makes
matter.
Us hyper vigilant.
Yeah.
About, you know, how these things all go. Because
right. I think
those
in the
cases
wake of
involved
that,
votes.
Right. In the wake of what happened with Cincinnati City Council, I think it would be smart for all of our electeds to err on the side of caution when it comes to transparency and disclosure. And that's, you know, that's what that story really, I think, mostly is about and what makes it so relevant. But congrats to you and Scott. That took a lot of work. And, you know, it's a fascinating topic. I think one that's going to resonate for a while in our community, you know, just because of what Cincinnati City Council went through. So, and there you have it. Well,
right.
Let's switch gears. Let's switch to Dimitri Young. Was he a switch hitter?
I don't know, bro.
I think he might have been. Well, we can ask him that. But, you know, if he was, what a perfect segue. If not,
okay,
you know, we're just going to bring on Dimitri Young.
Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. I'm excited to welcome Dimitri Young, two-time All-Star, St. Louis Cardinals, Detroit Tigers, Washington, D.C., and most importantly, you are a Cincinnati Red.
So welcome to the podcast. You are one of two grand marshals. You're going to be in the Reds opening day parade with your teammate, Pokey Reese. I guess my first question will this be the first time you've seen him for a while, or are you guys tight and hang out?
Well, considering that I live in California, he lives in South Carolina, the only time we're really able to meet up, obviously we'll meet up on the 27th when we fly into town, but we do the Reds fantasy camp, and we use the team that won it all this year, Plant City. And Pokey's been coming to Fasty Camp for about 2-3 years now. I've been doing it for about a dozen years, and this is the first time I won it. And I shouldn't say I won it. We won it.
Congratulations.
And well, thank you. And doing it with one of my best friends in the game, it gets no better than that.
Does that mean I have to, like, call you a 3-time All-Star? Like, what kind of, like, when winning that all, like, how, where do we put that in your stats?
Fantasy Camp champion. Oh, and I was also inducted into the Reds Fantasy Camp Hall of Fame as well. So that was quite the honor on top of winning the championship. It was quite the experience this year. And anybody that's listening and want to go to Reds Fantasy Camp in 2025, you know, go talk to Garrett Combs with the Cincinnati Reds, Rick Walls at the Hall of Fame Museum, and you would get quite the experience. You're going to have to work out and stuff beforehand. You know, you go out there all cold turkey, you're going to pull muscles, you're going to hurt yourself, you're going to embarrass yourself, and we will laugh at you.
Well, that's all part of it. What is your role specifically in Fantasy Camp?
Coach.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Are you the skipper?
Yeah, because they have, every team has two coaches.
Okay.
And all of them are former Reds players in some sense. And for us former players, it's always good to meet up and talk about old times and listen to the stories from Jim Maloney. And now that I was on that 99 Reds team, they're starting to give that team a little bit more love. They're still talking about the big red machine, 75, 76, and the 1990 wire-to-wire team, but we're starting to get a lot of love for that 99 Reds team that was supposed to finish in fourth place that year. And we was our lighter away from winning the World Series, because had we gotten into the playoffs, we would have destroyed everybody. But we're playing the game of what if.
I know. Well, we're going to talk about that 99 team. I have to ask you, when you do fantasy camp, do you take batting practice? And how's the, you're, what? Can, I mean, are you... Do you still like to get out there and hit?
God, no, I teach it now. Oh, God.
You don't, so you don't take batting practice and put on a clinic? You're not that old.
Yeah, I'm 50. Yeah, I'm old. I'm changing my last name to old, matter of fact.
Dimitri Old.
Wait, 50's not old? Let's be clear.
I think you could probably still, you know, put them out there.
I'm pretty sure I could, but I teach this stuff now. So if I do any sort of swinging, it's off a tee, and it's to demonstrate to the kids, you know, what a line drive approach looks like.
All right.
You know, because now you're getting into the whole launch angle, analytics, stuff like that, which for kids, they watch MLB Network and ESPN, and they see all of this stuff, and they feel that they got to try and hit home runs. And, you know, you got to get hits in games. That's what's important. A home run is technically a hit. A line drive is technically a line drive. So the things that I'm teaching is how to be successful in a game. And also dealing with desperate parents too. I want my kid to hit home runs. Well, if he's in high school, he's 15, 16, 17 years old, and he's 5'3". And weighs 105 pounds. Let's just try and get the ball to the outfield. Let's not try and hit the ball out, because it's just going to be a short pop up to the infield.
Sometimes parents need reminding. We've all been to sporting events where they have made their voices heard.
So the 99 team, just for our listeners who might not remember, 96 wins, which was the most since the Big Red Machine era. And you mentioned the Big Red Machine. 96 wins that season, but 865 runs scored, which I think is still the team record for single season runs scored, if I'm not mistaken. And you had a bunch of those runs. Fun team to watch. You know, we mentioned Pokey Reese. You had Danny Graves on that team, Sean Casey, Jason LaRue. Skipper Jack was the manager. Talk a little bit about what it was like to be on that team.
Well, on that 99 Reds team, it was basically a turning point, really. You know, I got traded there after the 97 season for Jeff Brantley. And
has he forgiven you for that? No jewelry.
You know, it was cool for me to leave St. Louis, having Tony La Russa as a manager, you know, businesslike and kind of strict, hard on rookies. And so I came to Cincinnati. I had Ken Griffey Sr. as a hitting coach. You had the captain, Barry Larkin, who pulled me aside and was like, look here, you don't look like you're having fun and stuff out here. And I don't know or care how it is in St. Louis. You're here now. We like to have fun. We get our work in. And he just kind of waved his hand around and just look at the outfield and stuff. It was like a family barbecue, except people was getting their work in, and it was a fun environment. And Lark said, if you don't act like you're having fun and having a good time, I know you just had a kid, I'm going to fine you $100 a day. And I'll come to smile. and then that year I got the, you know, become a ball player, really. You know, I got wound up hitting 48 doubles that year and kind of making a name for myself. And then when 99 came along, we traded for Greg Vaughn, and that changed everything because he just came from the World Series with the San Diego Padres, just hit 50 home runs, and he was told that he couldn't keep his goatee. And I'm going to impersonate Greg Vaughn to the best of my ability. Oh, no, you traded for me. Oh, no, I ain't saying this shit. You know, so
that is right. He was the player that led to the Reds changing their longstanding policy against facial hair, if I'm not mistaken. Right?
No, you're dead on.
And then you busted out with the goatee.
Well, I had the goatee. I had the field of failed experience, by the way. That experiment was not good.
The blonde hair. You can see the bobblehead
right here. And this was custom made from Jeff Cox. He was also a Reds Fantasy Camp Hall of Famer, and he was actually on me and Pokey's team this year. And this is the Goldilocks one.
Do you have this bobblehead, Burl?
So now Sherry's asking me, do I have that bobblehead? So, Dimitri, I have a pretty extensive bobblehead collection, but just to keep it in check, I only collect the stadium giveaways. I don't have any of the customs. I don't have any of the retail. But I'm going to have to make an exception.
This one looks pretty special.
I'm going to have to make an exception and find that bobblehead somewhere. And I have connections. So that's an outstanding bobblehead. When you dyed your hair blonde, I mean, I thought you were having fun.
I was until my batting average suffered.
Oh my gosh. I dye my hair blonde. No one made a bobblehead of me though, but I do dye my hair blonde.
Well, you talked about, so the trade for Greg Vaughn. So the 99 season, I mean, we had a stacked outfield because it was Mike Cameron, who later went on to Seattle, Greg Vaughn, and you when you weren't playing first base. I mean, think about the bats in that outfield right there.
Oh, and let's not forget Jeffrey Hammonds and Michael Tucker. Those two played on the 1992 Olympic team together and later being first rounders. Jeffrey Hammonds was the fourth pick in 92 to the Baltimore Orioles, and he came over halfway in the 98 season for Willie Green. And then Michael Tucker came over in 99, and he was a first rounder for the Kansas City Royals that same year as Hammonds. And they brought a lot of excitement to the team that, you know, you see the main names on the team, but we was a 25-man roster and everybody contributed. Everybody. And those two guys I'm still in touch with today, as well as Pokey, Sean Casey, the manager for the Yankees that we forgot to mention.
Aaron Boone.
That's right. Scott Williamson. Who else? Brady Clark. I mean, there's a lot of guys that I'm still in contact with that, but we were all in our growing pains together becoming big league ball players.
When you see this crop of Cincinnati Reds, these young players like coming up, do you see the same sense of fun?
It's kind of hard to say because the one thing that we did have was we had solid veterans that kind of patrolled how everything was going, how to act like a big leaguer. You know, we go out as a team. We would hang out after the game in the clubhouse talking about the game. I don't know how that happens today. Nobody wanted to hire me to be a coach in any organization. So I'm on the outside looking in. And so what if everything works to plan for this current team, they should have a lot of fun this year, backing up a lot of good numbers and keeping that stadium filled with fans.
So I would like to ask you about what you thought when you got the call inviting you to be one of the parade grand marshals, because playing here, you understand what opening day is in Cincinnati compared to other communities. You understand how important this parade is to the fans, and what I hope you understand what I perceive to be like one of the coolest things to be, if you have any connection in Cincinnati, is the grand marshal of the opening day parade. So you and Pokey Reese have that honor. What was that like when you got that phone call? Were you surprised?
Not only was I surprised, I was actually clueless on what that would entail. And Garrett sent me and Pokey both the itinerary of what we got to do. And the crowd is supposed to be huge out there. And being remembered in that sense, you know, I live in Southern California. Everybody here is a Dodger fan. And so, you know, people are not necessary, but, you know, if you didn't play for the Dodgers, you know, it's like, oh, you're a big league. Okay, cool. Even that I grew up out here and stuff like that, they're a Dodger fan. So when I do tell them, hey, I'm going to be the grand marshal, ooh, that sounds cool. Can I go? And I say, no, you can't.
What does it entail? So, would we be surprised by anything? I mean, I assume you're working on your wave.
On my what?
On your wave. That's perfect. You guys can't see it, but I can see it. You're spot on.
Salute the peace. Do that. Do a little bit of that. Yeah. Get the people what they want.
So what does it entail besides being in the parade? Do you have some appearances to make?
I have some appearances. I guess we get to speak to the crowd. Try and keep it PG. You know, because I know it's going to be so exciting.
There are a lot of children there.
So it sounds like it's going to be a great time, and then go to the stadium, watch the game, you know, BS with people, give them stories and you know, answer the questions. Oh, what are you doing these days? I can answer that too.
So one of the things you've done since your playing days that I learned recently when I was doing research for this interview is you became quite the baseball card collector, specializing on rookie cards. And so that might sound, you know, like not impressive to people who don't understand how much these things are worth. But you were quite the investor in cards. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that actually started when I was playing in Cincinnati. Danny Graves and myself did a card show. Not even a card show, it was more of an autograph signing. And for compensation, I wanted a Pete Rose rookie. And I didn't know anything about graded cards at that time. I want to say that was maybe after the 98 season or the 99 season. You know, it's kind of foggy when you start separating years. But, you know, I got a Pete Rose rookie PSA 8. And one of the important things about the Pete Rose rookie, one is Pete Rose, but another gentleman was on that card. His name is Ken McMullen, who is, as we consider here in Ventura County, he's like the lord of Ventura County. He played with the Dodgers, Angels, Oakland, and the Senators. And his son is one of my closest friends. We played high school ball together. He stayed with me when I was in Detroit. So that was my compensation, a PSA 8. And then that all season, I started getting more and more into cards and started collecting PSA 8 rookies because I collected cards when I was young. That's what really got me into baseball. You know, you play your ball game, you go get your Coca-Cola, you go get your hamburger or hot dog, and they used to have packs of Topps Fleer or Donruss. Yes, I'm dating myself, early, mid-80s. And I'll get a couple of packs of cards, open them up. And I was always fascinated by the rookie card, the person's very first card. So I had Daryl Strawberry, the white Gooden, had Eric the Red Davis, because that was from either 84 or 85 Tops where I was getting those. And then I just kept collecting from there. And, you know, now I'm getting into the graded card stuff. I did that while I was in Cincinnati when I got traded to Detroit. That was when the collection really got legs. And then from there, I was in Washington. And then I eventually parted ways with the cards. And now I am working for Collexor. And I'm going to be a spokesman where I'm going to actually be doing what I'm doing right now, talking about collecting my collection, how to collect, how to watch out for the scammers, because there are plenty of scammers out there. They do it for the wrong reasons. They take advantage of the people's love of collecting and try and make a quick buck. They can all go to hell for that. But, you know, that was my real enjoyment while I was playing and showing my PSA 10 cards off to like certain Hall of Famers that may have worked for different teams and stuff. I'll bring the card and show them the card. They really didn't know what they were looking at. They knew it was their card, but they didn't know that their card would be in immaculate condition like that and be in a holder. And you know, now it's cool. It's cool to collect cards. When I was collecting cards, I was a nerd.
No, I know. I'm with you. I remember, you know, I played Little League and I remember, you know, that big decision. If you had a certain, like if you had a limited amount of funds in your pocket, are you going to buy a slushie after the game? Or are you going to get a pack of baseball cards? And most of the time I would get the baseball cards. So, anyway, I have to ask you, do you still have the Pete Rose card?
Oh, no.
So you sold that.
Yeah,
and I believe you funded your foundation with
the auction back in 2012.
And you funded your foundation with the sale of some of those cards.
Yes, I did. And, you know, provide an opportunity for kids that can play but can't pay, you know, bridging that gap so these kids can get opportunities to go out there and, you know, play worry-free baseball. The parents don't have to worry about having to dig out of their pockets because it's expensive to play baseball. Very expensive. The travel costs, hotels, plane rides, equipment, uniform, usage of the field, getting hitting or pitching lessons. You know, there's a whole lot that goes into it, and me being able to help out just a little bit, hopefully, is a difference maker to that certain player.
That seems like a very good use of the cards, and they went to probably other people who valued them just as much as you did, and then the money benefited the kids.
And not everybody's that successful in turning them into investments. I have to ask you, you mentioned Daryl Strawberry and Eric Davis. Who were the players you looked up to when you were a little leaguer?
It was definitely those guys and Dwight Gooden, because when I started getting into baseball, my dad was in the Navy. He was an F-14 pilot. We were stationed in Virginia Beach, Virginia. I was around, you know, 9, 10, and the time wore the ties, AAA for the Mets, was right up the street, and we would frequently go and watch some minor league baseball, and I got to see Daryl Strawberry hit a 7,000-foot bomb, and the year after, got to see Dwight Gooden throw like a two-hitter and about like 80 pitches and strike out about a dozen. And so I was fascinated by those guys. And I was a Met fan growing up because back in the 80s, we all know there were three channels. Most people think two, but there's three channels that you can watch baseball. WTBS, the Braves, WGN, the Cubs, WWOR for the Mets. And that was the channel that I watched. And that's why I became a Met fan. Am I a Met fan today? No, I'm more of a fan of the game.
Were you pitching back then?
I did a little bit of pitching. I threw hard, but I couldn't hit that target all the time. So,
well, here's the reason I ask.
Infield and outfield.
One of my favorite memories as a fan watching you play was when it was early in the season. It was a rainy night, and the game was out of hand. And I guess Jack McKeon didn't want to burn up any of his pitcher's arms so early in the season, and he stuck you out there to retire the sides to get out of the game.
No, it wasn't me.
Are you sure?
Of course I'm sure. I don't know if I pitched or not.
I think I watched you pitch. I'm going to have to go back and replay the tapes in my mind, but I thought I saw you.
You got the Mandela effect going.
What's that?
You got the Mandela effect going.
No, you think so? Now I'm going to have to figure out who that was. Who that was. I was convinced it was you when we were getting ready for this interview. I thought, now I'm going to have to.
It was Lenny Harris in 98 who did it.
Was that who it was?
Look, he remembers.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I trust you, man. I believe you. You would know if you pitched. Were you ever a position player put out on the mound at all?
No.
Okay.
No, because they don't put first rounders in the minor leagues. When I was in the minor league, they don't put first rounders out there, and they normally don't put starters that are in their prime out there. They would put somebody that may be a pinch hitter.
Somebody expendable.
A bench role player, yeah.
All right, I gotcha. All right,
because you saw what happened with Jose Canseco when he tried to pitch.
It's always fun to watch when that happens, though, because there are some people that do have those arms that can do it.
Well, I don't have all of the baseball memories that Burl has, but I teased earlier in the earlier part of the podcast. I do feel like I have something that not all of the interviewers of you have. I've been to a Mahoning Valley Scrappers game. I'm from Youngstown.
Oh, nice.
So you were the manager in 2023 when I was looking up and doing some prep work. I was like, oh, Youngstown connection.
Yes.
I did not go last year because I do live here now, but I've been with my brother.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I had a great time last year managing in the draft league in Mahoning Valley. We were in Niles, Ohio at Eastwood Field, and it was quite the experience. The first half was more for the draft eligible guys for the 2023 draft. So that those guys had amateur status. And I had six high school players. A couple did well. Some of them, you know, they had their butts handed to them. It was like, you know, so you want to play this game. And it was just basically talking to them. I had Ray King as my pitching coach and Bryant Nelson as my hitting coach. And all of us had big league time, so a lot of the stuff that we was telling them was how to get to the big leagues, the things that you have to do to get to the big leagues. It's more than just having mechanics and I have a strong swing or I throw hard. It's how do you use all that in game situations? And a lot of them weren't used to playing every day. A lot of them weren't used to, you know, if you struggle, you'll get taken out of the game. I was like, no, I left you in because if they're scouts or college guys, a lot of the guys were using it as a transfer portal. A lot of kids were switching schools. I wanted the scouts and the recruiters to see these guys play a complete game. So if they start out 0-2, and then they come up in a key situation in the eighth inning and drive in two runs to help us win, they get to see that. They get to see a pitcher work through struggles. There was very few times where I would come out mid-inning and take a pitcher out. I would usually let him work out of it unless his pitch count went up and he couldn't find his zone and looked like he saw a ghost. It was like, all right, get his butt out of there.
They were lucky to have someone like you to seize the big picture and can teach them those things. Like, that's what it's about.
Oh, definitely. And even though we had the analytics stuff there, you know, the analytics were the numbers that the kids could read, but they had to put in the work. They had to know the swing path that it takes. They had to learn how to grip the bat properly, get proper distance off the plate. And most importantly, show up every day. Like I said before, the first thing is showing up. You got to show up because in college you play, what, 3 games a week, high school, 2, maybe 3, and they're spread out. Where pro ball, Monday through Monday, you're playing. You might get an off day sprinkled in, but it is every single day. You go 0-for-4, heck, guess what? You're still in the lineup and you're hitting third. Oh, you're 0-for-8? Well, you're lucky there's another third baseman here. You're going to add a day off and you're going to work with Nelly in the cage. And that was the cycle that we had the entire first half. And then the second half, it was more indie ball players. It was college guys out, eligibility, didn't get drafted or signed, but still want to continue to play. And I really enjoyed that second half, you know, because it was a smaller team and the guys were hungry. They wanted to get picked up. They wanted to go to a pro organization. These kids really worked hard. Both halves, they worked hard. I really loved the experience.
Well, we are at time. We can't thank you enough for joining us. We're excited to have you back in town. I know the fans will be thrilled to see you and Pokey Reese. Very quickly before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you, since we were talking about the differences between when you played and the game today, how do you feel about the rule changes, especially the pitch count or the pitch clock?
Well, the one thing that baseball is doing is they're speeding up the game, and that's part of the evolution of the game. You know, you can't fault anybody about wanting to speed the game up a little bit, make it a little bit more exciting, because the game has slowed up quite a bit over the years. All the pitching changes and the way the guys go up there taking 6-7 pitches per at bat, yeah, that's time. And the one thing you notice they never did was we're not going to shorten the time of the commercial breaks.
That is true.
We're not going to mess with the money.
You know, when you're talking about guys taking a lot of time at bat, your former teammate, Sean Casey, I can't imagine him doing that thing with his gloves on and off and adjusting his batting gloves when you have the pitch clock going. That would have changed his approach big time.
I think he still would have found a way. Oh, and one more thing that I wanted to mention was I'm doing my wrestling podcast with a guy named Dennis Farrell. I'm doing it again. It's called the Wrestling Perspective Podcast, and talk about professional wrestling up and down. That was another passion of mine that I love to do. Never got in the ring. Actually, I did get in the ring, but I just wanted to make mention of that as well.
We are happy to hype other people's podcasts too.
Thank you.
Well, good luck being Grand Marshal. Hopefully it won't rain on your parade.
They better have an umbrella if that's the case.
I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. Well, thank you, Dimitri, again. What great memories I have watching you play, even though one of them obviously is affected by the Mandela effect. I'm going to have to.
It happens.
If we were putting money on the table, I would have bet that I saw that. So I'm going to have to figure out. There we go. And there's the bobblehead. He's showing us the. That's fantastic.
Those are great.
Those are fantastic. Well, you still have that big goatee. It's not blonde anymore. It's a little more gray than last we saw you. But there's plenty of opportunity for you to dye it blonde again in honor of your parade appearance.
Nope, and I don't call this gray or silver. This is chrome.
Chrome. I'm going to remember
generation.
That.
Me too.
This is chrome.
I have a matching chrome beard as well. Well, thank you again, Dimitri, and we'll see you on opening day.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Little touch of home for me there. That was fun. And we really are in the countdown to opening day. As we record now, what did we got? 8 days?
No, we had a little more than that.
8 plus 7.
No, it's we were recording on the 13th.
Yeah.
So it's, what, 15, 14 days.
All right. right. You never ask a journalist to do math. True story.
But we're coming up on it. So talking to Dimitri Young, thinking of that 99 team, reminded me of one of the most classic That's So Cincinnati moments you could ever have.
Ooh.
And that's everybody's weird connection to Cincinnati. So here you go. When I lived out west in Reno, boy, did I miss going to Reds games, right? So I would, you know, try to pick up games on the radio. I would drive to San Francisco from Reno to watch games when the Reds were playing the Giants. But here's the weird, like, you know, one degree of separation to Cincinnati. When my son started preschool at Reno Christian Fellowship, okay, right up the road from where we lived, a nice, you know, beautiful preschool facility that this church operated, I dropped him off and met the two teachers, and I was wearing a Reds hat. And one of the teachers said, "Oh my gosh, are you a Reds fan?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, love the Reds." And she said, "Well, guess who my dad is?" And I was like, "I have no idea." And she said, "Jack McKeon."
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's a big Reds player.
He was the manager of that team. Okay. He was Trader
Sorry.
Jack.
Skipper Sorry,
Jack.
Guys.
Yeah, Jack McKeon. Great manager. He managed for, I think, at least a couple of teams in the major leagues. But yeah, he was.
Did you get to meet him?
No, I didn't get to meet him. But man, did I ask her a lot of questions about, you know.
All right, take advantage.
Yes. So, in All Roads Lead Back to Cincinnati Somehow, my son's first preschool teacher was the daughter of Jack McKeon.
Okay. This is true about Cincinnati,
it's
for sure.
It's so true about Cincinnati. Anyway.
All right. That's So Cincinnati.
There you go. Well, here's to opening day.
Here's to opening day.